In this episode of the 90s and Noughties UK podcast, I'm joined by Robin to talk about a range of TV-related subjects. Then, Hayley has another go at celebrity birthdays. That's all to come.
This is 90s and Noughties UK, a podcast on UK pop culture of the 90s and 2000s. If you want to contact the show, email 90sandnoughties@gmail.com, tweet us on @90sandnoughtiesUK on Twitter, or check us out on Facebook, 90s and Noughties UK.
So welcome to another series of the 90s and Noughties UK podcast. I'm back again for 2021, and you may have noticed that we're slightly shorter than we were previously, and this is really a workload thing to try and lessen the workload so that I can try and push more episodes of the podcast out over the course of the next year or so. So that is the reasoning for that. And I'd like to say thank you for all the support, all the new listens that we've had over the time that we have been off. So yeah, later on, Hayley will be joining me once more to guess whose birthday it is on the week of this broadcast. But first, this. And now I'm joined by podcast regular Robin, who is here to talk about those rose-tinted spectacles that we can sometimes have when remembering shows from yesteryear. So what were you thinking?
Well, it's interesting because there's one word that sort of describes it, and I only discovered it when watching a video from Apple Mask, who put up a very good history of Saturday morning shows on his Vimeo and YouTube channels. And I've always been interested in how long-running shows have sort of like gone on a long decline towards the end, to the point that people who remember it may not remember how it ended. And he used the word entropy. And because I'm not really that smart, I had to Google the word. And in its sort of non-physics related word, it meant from order turning into disorder over a long period of time. And I don't think there's a better example of this than what we discussed on the last time I was here, CITV in particular, because they went through quite a long period, which I believe, well, this is just my perspective, it started around 1993. So when ITV as a whole, they were slowly but surely starting to ditch their public service requirements, and children's programs were any exception. So the newly created position of a network head of children's programs, Dawn Airey, went as far as dropping in vision presentation, moving preschool programs from the long-established 10 past 12 midday slot after this morning to a slot at 3:30, and the shows got shortened, telling teenagers to effectively naff off by dropping shows such as Nightmare, Bad Influence, and, as we discussed, little to no effort on Saturday mornings. I still watched it, but it was a sense that it was all, they weren't putting the money in, and that was sort of put on a temporary halt when Nigel Pickard became the head of children's programs across ITV around the late 90s. He brought back in vision presentation with Danielle and Stephen, and he managed to inherit a Saturday morning show that didn't just take on the BBC, it managed to beat them full stop with SMTV. And the BBC ended up headhunting him, and he became their head of children's programmes when approached, I think it was personally, by his former TBS boss, Greg Dyke. So whilst he had a £105 million budget to play with launching the digital channels, CBBC, CBeebies, JD Grace's successor at ITV was having 30% cuts to her budget. And that's when, well, we talked about it when we, on the last podcast, how it all slowly but surely started to fall apart.
Yeah, I do remember that conversation, and I remember that yourself and the guest that we had on there went into a lot of detail about it.
One of the things that we didn't discuss was that Janie Grace, she actually went as far as going to the then regulator, the ITC, to persuade the idea to solve the solution, turning CITV into its own company. But in order to do that would have required permission from both. I think it would have required a change in the law, and the Office of Fair Trading weren't having it. So she ended up leaving, and over time it got even worse. They closed down the Birmingham studios, moved it to Manchester, got rid of the Envision presenters, didn't commission as many programs, and by 2006 they used the basically the excuse of banning junk food advertising during hours of children's programs as a good reason to get rid of it altogether, because they had their own channel now, although it was basically just showing repeats and imports on it.
Yeah, there were a lot of imports around that time, especially from Disney Channel and Nickelodeon.
It's weird, but there are lots of imports on the CITV channel, but not that many on ITV itself. Well, certainly not around the 2000 onwards. I mean, the only one I can really remember, I didn't watch the series properly, but there was lots of hype around this series called Pushing Daisies, which didn't even get shown in full. They ditched one of the episodes, so it would run up to it would finish in time for that year's European Football Championships, which England weren't even playing in. And it's interesting how we remember that period around 98-99 as a big period for CITV, when CBBC was having its own problems. I mean, what I've noted down was that following the sacking of Richard Bacon from Blue Peter, they underwent a sort of back to basics strategy to make sure the presenters didn't have as big a showbiz lives off screen, which may explain why we ended up with programs. It got uploaded to the What's on the Tapes YouTube channel a couple of months ago. We ended up with programs such as Teddy Quest, which I completely forgotten about. And I thought, how on earth did this end up being? It was the program that aired during the summer on CBBC during 1999. And it was like they took a school's program and promoted it to the summer mornings.
I have no memory of that. What is that, Teddy Quest?
Yeah, Teddy Quest was a program that was hosted by two characters called Quester and Butt. And it was basically when I posted the link on YouTube, I sort of described it as the televisual precursor to Radio 4's Go For It, which was their attempt at doing a program for children, but was just incredibly patronizing. Not many people do remember it, but they do. Unfortunately, the episode that got uploaded wasn't the one, which I'm not sure if it's true or not, but I'd love to see it, when a kid rang up because they took live phone calls on it, just to tell the presenter, Quester, that the show was shit and he couldn't act. I'd have loved to have seen that. It wasn't even mentioned in any newspapers. I think they tried to brush it under the carpet. But this program was up against The Bigger Breakfast on Channel 4, when The Big Breakfast during the summer, they'd go on until midday, and they had shows like Renford Rejects, Johnny Bravo. No wonder, I mean, it's no surprise why I was opting for that rather than what the BBC had to offer around that time.
Which explains why neither of us remember it being a thing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I vaguely remember, but that's because my younger brother and sister tended to prefer what the BBC had. And I was getting into my teens, and things like Channel 4 had started T4, which was actually created by Andy Peters. He hadn't done so well at London Weekend Television after leaving Live and Kicking. So he moved to Channel 4 and he created a show, a strand that managed to take down the BBC. It should be explained that the BBC as a whole was going through quite a lull period, because Noel's House Party had just finished and none of the replacements could really cut it. And I thought, why on earth are lifestyle programmes now being shown in primetime? Things such as Changing Rooms, Ground Force. I don't want to be reminded of things that television for me has been like escapism. And now I'm being reminded of things that are around the home. And they were popular. I do acknowledge they were popular.
Oh my goodness, they were popular. I mean, I watched Ground Force. I have no interest in gardening whatsoever.
Yeah.
But it was event television. You wanted to see what they were going to do.
I was forced into watching it. And I mean, the production company that produced Ground Force and Changing Rooms ended up being that produced Big Brother and latterly The Voice. And it was Bazaal over here, but then it got amalgamated into Endemol, the Dutch company. I mean, people remember that fondly, but it's just a case of them. They went on for quite a long time.
Well, I think a lot of series tended to overstay their welcome at times.
Yes. I mean, the one example I put down for the BBC was, I mean, it certainly had lots of up and downs in the 90s, was Top of the Pops. I mean, at the moment, they're showing the old episodes from 1990 on BBC Four. And I can remember them first time round. And it's reminding me, watching them now, 30 years on, that there was an awful lot of rubbish in the charts, certainly in the early part of 1990. I mean, this week is boasting highlights of performances by Michael Bolton and Shakin' Stevens.
I mean, as a Shaky fan, you know, I like that. But a lot of people, yeah. I know at the time.
But by 1990, he wasn't exactly in his prime, was he?
Well, no. And I know that the story of 1990 that they broadcast recently did say, and I think they say this every year and will continue to do so, that Top of the Pops continued to have those older performers on from like the glory days.
That's interesting because a year later they relaunched the show. They wanted to make it younger, but they still got very old performers such as Neil Sedaka and Neil Diamond on the show. And it sort of found its feet in the mid-90s when Rick Blackstill, the former Radio 1 producer, who'd had success producing Simon Mayer's Breakfast Show, he was brought in to save the show, got the old Radio 1 DJs back presenting after they disposed of them in 91. He also got guest presenters such as Jack D, Angus Deaton, Julian Clary to present the show in their tongue-in-cheek manner. And it became must watching. I mean, I did watch it every week, but it became, I think, more of an event in the 90s. But then they moved it to Friday nights. I mean, it was only meant to be temporary because of it was a very sports-heavy summer with Euro 96, the Olympics, but it stayed on Fridays. And then they got another new producer in, Chris Carey, who used to work on shows like The Right Room. And as far as I remember it, people my age will remember the late 90s very fondly. I just thought the show became very formulaic, and it was as if Chris Carey had a very tight iron fist on the show to the point that the presenters read out his scripts word for word. They weren't allowed to ad lib, and it just looked incredibly desperate.
The thing that jumps to my mind is that you say sort of the mid-90s was something of a booming period. You have very fond memories. But do you think that when BBC Four finally do get there, if they get there, that you will turn round and, like 1990, go, I didn't realise there was so much rubbish?
Well, no, because I've watched back some of the shows from the mid-90s. There's still a few on YouTube, and I've taken them for what they are. I mean, when you watch them all back-to-back, you'll realise that there was rubbish in 1995 as well. But by the time it gets to that point, if they do, we'll be able to draw a more clearer conclusion. It's not till you see them all the way through. Around about 2003, Chris Carey was producer for 6 months until they hired Andy Peters. He'd come from Channel 4 to produce the show. And Andy Peters gets the same sort of derision from long-standing Top of the Pops fans as Matthew Bannister would from Radio 1 veterans in suggesting that he killed the show. I mean, that's not really a fair... I mean, he had to make the show younger.
He tried so much to make it younger and kind of revitalize it. And I know by the end they were doing weird stuff like celebrity guests. They had Jeremy Clarkson in, people like that, to try and excite it. And they were, at one point, they were playing clips from old Top of the Pops on new Top of the Pops, which was a very bizarre thing. And they'd come out of a clip from, say, 1992 and go, they look like they're having fun. And it's like, what?
Well, it was when it got moved to BBC Two in 2005, because the relaunch hadn't quite worked, and the controller of BBC One had very sort of, what they'd said in the documentary, had very firm ideas for Top of the Pops. So they moved it to BBC Two, combined elements of the very successful Top of the Pops Two by showing the old performances, but getting guest presenters like Clarkson, Phil Jupitus, and pretty much all the Top Gear presenters at the time did it. And that was sort of a death knell. In fact, in this book I've got here called The History of Rock and Pop on British Television, it talks about how it ended up being axed. Chris Carey talks about why he didn't think that the show should have been axed. And he said that when Top of the Pops died, somebody said, or quite a lot of people said, it was because of MTV and the internet. That was rubbish. Well, he thought it was rubbish because MTV had been going since 1981. The internet had been around for just about 10 years. And he says it's because we've been making Top of the Pops really badly. The BBC didn't give it any love. And he says it's a cracking program. It's a cracking format. I could still do really well. But no, the format was getting very tired. I mean, when it was shown on Friday nights, you were counting down a chart that was 5 days old. And programs like CD UK were predicting what the next day's chart would be, because that went out on Saturday. But CD UK had finished by the time of by 2006. I mean, because they were struggling without SMTV to warm it up.
Yeah, it died, didn't it?
Yeah, and this was around the time I was at university. I didn't even notice that these shows were going. It was only until, because during university I had a manic episode, and it wasn't until I had to go home to recover, but I suddenly realised they've all gone. All these strands and shows that I enjoyed watching, they've all disappeared. There's very little music on television anymore.
No, and I think that also is counted because of the demise of Saturday morning television as well.
Well, that's because they tried to make, because the arrival of digital channels, they weren't just up against each other, they're up against loads of channels, and they made the mistake of trying to make the shows younger, which sort of worked with Dick and Dom in the Bungalow, but programmes like ITV's Ministry of Mayhem, well, for the first year, I didn't think they were making any effort at all. In fact, all the episodes are being uploaded. They're currently up on YouTube. They're currently up to around this time in 2004. And it wasn't until 2005 when Michael Underwood left and the show started getting the features it's best remembered for, such as Ram Ray, which they got, sorry, I've just remembered, they got a midget to run into fake doors, and only one of them was made out of polystyrene. And the game Name That Tone, which had a character called Mr. Lee, which you definitely couldn't do that. Well, not least because the actor who played him's dead, but it was a Korean actor, and that could look rather racist if it was to be done now.
Well, everything you're describing, and again, I think we're finding this when we look back at stuff, we don't realise quite how bad they really were. Not just...
or risque they were.
Yeah. In their quality, but in kind of the way that culture has moved on from certain representations.
Yeah, well, not just that. I mean, I was going to say that even though those features on Ministry of Mayhem, MOM, were popular, they were nowhere near as memorable as what Ant and Dec were doing on SMTV, such as Wonky Donkey or Challenge Ant. There was an article, I mean, referring back to CITV on the UK game shows webpage from the Weavers Week section from back in September 2000, which, like Chris Carey and Top of the Pops, they talked about their own... sorry, it's making me laugh because like their own imaginary solutions. If they'd done that, then we wouldn't be in this mess. And their suggestion was the thought of CITV adapting the Harry Potter books. You'd think would be a good idea, but in hindsight, it would be too similar to the adaptation of The Worst Witch, which, I mean, it wasn't a program I watched, but it was very popular.
Oh, my goodness. Do you know, I loved The Worst Witch. I thought it was great.
Well, they've adapted it now on CBBC for, I think, a second time.
And I think the problem with the new adaptation, if we're going to go there, is that it almost is inspired way too much by Harry Potter.
Yeah, it's taken influence. I mean, I wasn't a big fan of a Harry Potter, but well, I read the first book, but I sort of went off it when I read The Chamber of Secrets and didn't continue from there onwards, and I've not seen any of the movies. But that just proves a point. J.K. Rowling thought that the big screen was a bigger investment than the small screen. And it reminds me of another comparison when, after Chris Carey had been booted from Top of the Pops, he was one of the producers who pitched the show that would replace CD UK when that finished on ITV. And I'm not sure if he got it or not. The winning pitch went to a company called Dun & Dusted, but they needed to get a sponsor for the show, and they had O2 lined up. They'd been in talks with O2, but they pulled out and the show never got shown. And that was probably because O2 saw live music venues as a bigger draw for music than television.
Yeah, it did start to become quite fragmented, and I think the value of television did decrease in the mid-2000s.
And the exact period when I was at university, I've listened back to some of the shows I did. I can remember talking up gigs for the new O2 Arena in London, and it just made me think I was in my own bubble, not aware that things were changing in television. But then again, I was 10 years off the cutoff point for CBBC's target audience. I was 22 and they were catering up to 12 years old. So maybe a case I was too old.
Well, I think so. And I think there is that cutoff point. I mean, I stopped watching about, 2004 or 5, the moment that CBBC introduced Ka-Ching, if you remember that.
Yes, I remember that.
Which was a very strange sitcom, and things like Tracy Beaker, which, to be honest, I never got.
Well, Tracy Beaker's interesting because that ended up turning, that came back, was coming back again with Tracy Beaker being a mum next year. But there was a spin-off of the original series where Tracy returned to her care home, this time as a care worker, and that ended up becoming the dumping ground after the Tracy Beaker character left. And I find myself watching it and I'm thinking, many tend to think that children's programs aren't as good as they were when they were growing up. I wish we had a series like The Dumping Ground when I was getting older, because it covered lots of very heavy issues. I mean, children with, there was a kid with Asperger's syndrome in there and one whose mum had mental health difficulties. We didn't have anything that, well, I certainly didn't. Grange Hill and Biker Grove were, I mean, they could be victims of entropy as well, because they went on for too long after their prime.
Yeah, I think it could be argued. I mean, the fact that they did, well, I don't know whether Waterloo Road did a Grange Hill or Grange Hill did a Waterloo Road, but didn't they move it? Didn't it move to Liverpool or something?
Grange Hill moved to Liverpool around 2003 because Phil Redmond, the creator who hailed from Liverpool, I mean, it was unfortunate timing, but another of the shows that he made, Brookside, got cancelled in 2003 as well. And he used the final episode of that. Not that I was a big fan of that series, but I've watched it back. He got one of the characters, I think it was Jimmy Corkill, to basically have a rant at Channel 4 commissioning shows like Big Brother, and they became more popular than Brookside. And he was just having a go at them. And this is just, it's like Chris Carey with Top of the Pops getting the presenters to say his words through their mouths, whereas Phil Redmond with Brookside was getting the actors to say his thoughts.
I'm sure we could do a giant chat about Phil Redmond and the impact he had on 90s television. Because he's also responsible for the Emmerdale plane crash.
Was it him who did? I didn't know that.
They asked for his advice, and basically, I don't know whether you've ever seen it. It's wonderfully done, you know, as a story. It's really cinematic. And when they're running through the village and you can see sheep lying on the floor and you think, this is Emmerdale Farm dying before my eyes. They're really trying to refresh this, to stop it from dying, because Emmerdale obviously started as a daytime soap and they'd got very much stuck in that farming thing. And in 89, they rebranded it to Emmerdale from Emmerdale Farm. And by 94,
Christmas 93, when I think the air crash happened.
Yeah, so they did this thing, and it was extremely controversial, but I believe that Phil Redmond was one of the people who turned around and went, yeah, let's do that. And it changed the whole thing. I mean, they're repeating them on ITV3 at the moment, and they often say, oh, it was very boring in the early 90s, before 93. And you think, actually, they were just covering things that were relatable. Whereas later, you get these ridiculous kind of twists and turns. It's getting soapier and soapier. I mean, somebody referred to that 89 to 93 era as Emma Dallas. which was perfect because they brought in a new family. They made it kind of more trendy and stepped away from the farm thing. So, yeah, we could have an entire conversation about the impact that Redmond had just upon British TV in general, because after the plane crash, other soaps suddenly woke up and it got bigger and bigger and bigger. And they're still on TV today, probably because of it.
Yeah, whereas Redmond's own creation of Brookside just sank lower and lower into decline. We were recording this a couple of days after Channel 4's 38th birthday. Hollyoaks has now run longer than Brookside did in its during its time on air, which I think is even more interesting to note in terms of time span. I mean, I didn't even have this noted, but it's good, though, that we've covered it, I think.
Yeah, as I say, the entire conversations about this stuff. So one final thought then, Robin.
Well, everyone has like fond memories of the programmes that they watched, but it's very easy for people to, I mean, this is sort of a similar area. They change history according to fit their own ideologies or recollections. And when saying that programs finished like due to outside circumstances, when in fact the ratings weren't good. And I mean, very quickly to bring it back to Saturday mornings, during that whole period when ITV were struggling to beat Live and Kicking, one of the shows that they got was Wow, a show hosted by Simeon Courtney, who'd come from CBBC, and Sophie Aldred, who played Sylvester McCoy's companion in Doctor Who in the late 80s, probably my first companion I can remember. And it was not too bad a show. It was the first live one they'd done in 18 months, and it was up against Zoe and Jamie's first series of Live and Kicking. And many television enthusiasts, they think that it finished because ITV had got the rights to Formula One Grand Prix coverage, and they had to take money out of children's programmes to fund it. When in actual fact, according to the former editor of Blue Peter, Richard Marson, well, future at the time, it bombed. The show bombed just like all the others. Wow, just bombed like all the others. And telling them that it was because of a Grand Prix was because it was letting them down lightly. I sort of knew this all along, what the real reason was, because it was covered in the Doctor Who magazine at the time, about a month after Wow and the Noise, the music magazine that Andy Peters did, they'd finished. There was a section in the magazine telling what former cast members of Doctor Who were up to outside of the TARDIS, as the magazine put it, and it mentioned that Sophie Aldred's Saturday morning show, Wow, it was meant to have run up till May, but they pulled it before Christmas because of low ratings. That's all it was. We can all let our recollections sort of get in the way of data and the facts.
Well, yes, and the fact that audiences, you know, everybody is different, and if enough people don't like something, it doesn't come back.
Yeah. I mean, there's loads of series that I can remember fondly that weren't that successful. but I'd love to see again to see if they really were that good. Quite often they're not. They are rubbish.
Yeah, they can be when you go back and revisit something. I know that recently there was that call, wasn't there, from people saying that they'd wanted to be like head of programming at BBC or something, wasn't it? And there were people saying, oh, I would bring back Top of the Pops.
And, yes.
And I might have been yourself or someone else.
I think it was actually
on my timeline who was like, were those people that are saying that probably have never heard of Dua Lipa.
That's, I did write that, yes.
Yeah, and have never actually, you know, have fond memories of it. But in today's climate, if it was brought back, it just wouldn't work, or it would be different to how we remember. It's like whenever anybody remakes anything and we go, oh, I used to love that. But the thing is, there have been changes in production methods. There's been changes in culture, and certain things just wouldn't work now. I mean, I mentioned possibly on this podcast to come that they're making a movie version of Chippendale's Rescue Rangers.
a live action thing.
And the thing is, if you watch that program there is so much representation in there that is just not done now.
There was, I think, a very old Chippendale cartoon I found on one of my YouTube videos, I think, of CITV from the late 80s. It had them mimicking Oriental stereotypes, which just wasn't cool at all.
No. Well, that seems like a good place to stop.
Yeah.
But thank you so much, Robin, for being on the podcast today.
Thank you for having me back.
And now it's time for a regular feature on the podcast. It's time for Celebrity Birthdays, which is personally inspired by Kevin Cohen and Brian Leonard at The Point in the United States. Go and check out their show, the morning show. Great talk show, that. And I'm joined once again by Hayley, who's here to try and guess whose birthday it is in the week of this broadcast. So welcome, Hayley, once again. You may commence questioning right now.
Thank you, Jamie. Are they female?
Yes.
Okay. Are they an actor?
They have done a little bit of acting, yes.
Have they been a singer as well?
Yes, extremely.
Right, so I'm taking it they've done more singing than acting.
I would say, yes, they have done more singing than acting, yes.
I'm just going to make a guess straight away. It's not going to be, but it's just because it's the first person I've thought of.
Okay.
But I don't think it's going to be. Billy Piper?
It's not Billy Piper.
Yes. I just thought I'd try. Right, okay, so I've got to mow it down more. Are they still singing now?
They have done a little bit of singing, yes. As far as I know, they are still active.
Okay. Are they American?
They're not American.
Are they British?
They're not British.
Mm. Okay. Are they Irish?
They are Irish, yes.
Right, okay. Is it right to make another guess?
You can make another guess, yeah.
I don't think this is Kate, but again, it's the first person I thought of. Sinead O'Connor?
It's not Sinead O'Connor.
Okay. Were they in a band?
As far as I know, they weren't in a band. They were a solo singer.
Right, okay. Were they a pop artist?
They were predominantly a pop artist, yes.
Okay. When they've done acting, have they been in films?
Yes.
How about TV series?
As far as I know, not really, only as a guest.
Okay. Yeah, this is already going to be a tough one. Just trying to narrow it down some more, really.
Okay, well, I'll give you a clue. Just to speed things up, they were they appeared on Dancing on Ice in 2008.
No, it's not really happening. I only watch it occasionally. I'm not really someone that watches it all the time, so I can't really remember. Oh, just trying to think of someone that's Irish. So.
Okay,
were they around in the 90s?
Just about. Tail end of the 90s.
I'd like to make another guess, if I may, please.
Go on then, yes.
Is it Samantha Mumba?
Oh, it is.
Yes! Woo! Get it!
You got one. Where did that come from?
Oh, just suddenly dawned on me. I was just like, I was thinking, because I was a fan of hers, and I remember she did do other stuff, and she did films and whatnot, and I was like, the fact that she's just in the 90s, and I know she's more like noughties, it's like right on the edge when it just like going into the noughties, you know.
Yeah. I'm surprised. I didn't even know she was Irish.
I knew.
I didn't even know she was Irish. She's turning 38 years old on the 18th of January. So happy birthday to Samantha Mumba. Well done, Hayley, for getting that.
Thank you. Bless her. Happy birthday, Samantha. Woo, 38.
Thank you for listening to 90s and Noughties UK, a podcast on UK pop culture of the 90s and 2000s. Please remember to rate, comment and subscribe on your favourite podcast provider. If you want to contact the show, email 90sandnoughties@gmail.com, tweet us on @90sandnoughtiesuk on Twitter, or check us out on Facebook, 90s and Noughties UK.